Good morning again. Okay. This morning we're going to go through Luke 19:11-27. In the youth group right now, we're going through the parables of Jesus, and that's what we're going to go through this morning. And we sort of went through this in the youth group, but I'm going to go through it again because I really like this parable. It's the parable of the minas. But before we get into the parable, I'm going to give you some background. In the previous chapter, Jesus is traveling through the city of Jericho. He's getting ready to travel through Jericho. He's letting his people know, or his disciples know, that he's going up to Jerusalem, that he's going to have, he's going to be crucified, he's going to be punished basically for our sins, and they're not understanding that this is going to happen. In fact, it says the meaning was hidden from them. They still believed he was the Messiah. So in the back of their minds, they're thinking, okay, well, we're going up to Jerusalem. He's going to set up his kingdom. You know, he's explained to them he's going to die, but they're like, well, we don't really get that, but he's still going to set up his kingdom. And I think it's important to realize here, because it kind of is the reason for the parable, is why they didn't understand. In the Jewish thought, when they looked at the Old Testament, they saw two messiahs. They saw Messiah, the son of David, and they saw Messiah, the son of Joseph. Now, Messiah, the son of Joseph, was the Messiah they thought who was going to come and suffer. And he was the son of Joseph because just like Joseph was treated poorly at the hands of his brothers, thrown into a pit, just all those things that happened to him, that's why he was called Messiah, the son of Joseph. Now, the second one was Messiah, the son of David. He was the one who's going to be the conquering king, the one who's going to set up the political kingdom, and that's who they thought Jesus was. They misunderstood the Old Testament text. They thought it was two messiahs coming once, not one messiah coming twice. And that was their misconception. Now, a good example of this is going to be also in the book of Luke. And I'm going to read that for you right now, actually. It's in Luke chapter 4. You don't have to turn there. But Jesus, after his temptations in the wilderness, he's going through the region and he's saying, you know, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and he goes to his hometown. He sits in the synagogue, and there's a tradition where, you know, someone can get up and read from the scrolls. So Jesus gets up. He turns to Isaiah 61, verses 1 and, well, it wasn't verses 1 and 2 then. It was just Isaiah. He looks through the scroll, and he finds the part that says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord." And then he closed the book, and he goes and he sits down, and he says, "This is fulfilled in your service today." And it says they looked at him and were astonished at the gracious words that appeared from his mouth, because he was saying, "I'm the Messiah." Now, it's important where he stopped, because part of the Jews' confusion was the first and the second coming, the prophecies were mixed together. Now he stops in verse 2 for us, which would be halfway through the verse. Now the last half talks about the second coming. So that was part of their confusion. And that's one of the examples. And there's actually a multitude of examples of that happening in the Old Testament. Now as he's on his way to Jerusalem, he goes through Jericho. And he stops and he has dinner at Zacchaeus' house. And everybody knows the wee little man Zacchaeus and the impact he had on his life. And he had such an impact that Zacchaeus gives, I believe, what is it, 5 times back to everybody he's cheated. He starts giving his possessions to the poor. So his life is completely turned around. And now as a result, Jesus says to Zacchaeus and to those who are around listening, "Today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." Now, he says that because Zacchaeus was the chief tax collector. No one likes tax collectors then. No one likes them now. And he's making a point. He says, you know what? He still has the opportunity for salvation. And Zacchaeus' life was obviously turned around. Now, his followers hear salvation, and again, they're thinking of their salvation from Rome, the political freedom that they're going to get from that, not the salvation of their souls, which is Jesus' obvious intent. Now, at this point, he decides to tell the parable. So let me start in verses 11 and 12 of Luke 19. "Now, while they were listening to this, he went on to tell them a parable. because he was near Jerusalem, and the people thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear at once. And he said, a man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. Now, before I proceed any farther, this sounds very similar to the parable of the talents. It is not the same. It's very similar, but they both have different points that they make. Now, there's a couple reasons I believe they're different. One is, this parable is spoken in Jericho, when he's close to Jerusalem. The parable of the talents is actually spoken on the Mount of Olives during Jesus' Olivet Discourse, when he's talking about the end of the times and the end of the age. The second reason is, this parable was spoken to a mixed crowd of Jews. The parable of the talents was spoken only to the disciples, the 12. And the third reason is, there's three classes of people in this parable. There's the master, the servants, and then it says citizens in the parable. In the talents, there's only the master and the servants. Fourth reason, talents, each servant receives a different number of them, 5, 2, and 1, according to their ability. And in the minas, they all receive one mina. They all receive an equal opportunity to use the gifts or to use the money of the master. In the talents, the whole point is the faithfulness and the responsibility that you're given. In the parable of the minas, we all are shown that it's not just the people who get responsibility. We all have an equal opportunity to use the gifts that God's given us. We all have something that we can do for God. So, the reason for the parable, as we just mentioned, was they thought he was going to set up the kingdom. Now, keep in mind what a parable is. Its purpose in the Greek, parable is parabolos, to come alongside of. It was to show a specific truth. And it was usually laid along a picture that they understood. The parable of the soils, they were agricultural society, so they understood the farming, and the wayside was the paths that were hard and packed down. So they understood everything in that parable. And he always had a picture, something that they would get. Now this parable, actually in Jerusalem, mirrors something that happened 30 years previously. When Herod the Great died, he had three sons. Well, he had more than that, but three sons that were basically fighting for the throne. Now, Antipas was the one who originally was in the will to take over the whole kingdom that Herod the Great had. 4 days before he died, he changed his will, and his son Archelaus basically was able to get his father to say, okay, you're going to be the king over everything. However, Archelaus could not just take the title of king. What happened was he had to go to Rome to obtain a kingdom so that he could be called that. Now, he didn't really get his wish. Instead of getting the whole region like his father had, they split it up into three parts. He got half, and his two brothers got a quarter of the kingdom. Now, when he went to Rome to receive his kingdom, a delegation of 50 Jews went there also to say, you know what, we don't want this man to rule over us. Now, there were 8,000 Jews in Rome who went to the Senate and to the emperor and said, we support these Jews, we don't want Archelaus ruling in Judea. Now, that kind of ticked him off, so when he got back, he made things very difficult for the Jews. There were several thousand who were killed in an insurrection, as well as other things that happened. Now, Jesus is applying this parable to himself. He didn't come the first time to set up a kingdom. Obviously, we all know that. He came to seek and save that which was lost. But he will come the second time to set up the kingdom. So Jesus, once he died on the cross, he ascended to heaven. So he went to a far country, heaven, to receive the kingdom from his Father. Now, this parable is also going to illustrate the conduct that the servant should have until he comes back at the second coming to set up the millennial kingdom. Now, let me go ahead and read the entire section. Actually, mine's going to sound a little different because I actually have a new King James up here instead of my NIV that you guys are using. Now as they heard these things, he spoke another parable, because he was near Jerusalem, and because they thought the kingdom of God would appear immediately. Therefore he said, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. So he called 10 of his servants, delivered to them 10 minas, and said to them, do business till I come. But his citizens hated him, and sent a delegation after him, saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. And so it was, that when he returned, having received the kingdom, he then commanded these servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Master, your mina has earned 10 minas. And he said to him, well done, good servant. Because you were faithful in a very little, have authority over 10 cities. And the second came, saying, Master, your mina has earned 5 minas. Likewise, he said to him, you also be over 5 cities. And another came, saying, Master, here is your mina, which I have kept put away in a handkerchief, for I feared you, because you are an austere man. You collect what you did not deposit and reap what you did not sow. And he said to him, out of your own mouth I will judge you, you wicked servant. You knew that I was an austere man, collecting what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money in the bank, that at my coming I might have collected it with interest? And he said to those who stood by, take the mina from him and give it to him who has 10 minas. But they said to him, Master, he already has 10 minas. For I say to you that to everyone who has will be given, and from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. But bring here those enemies of mine who did not want me to reign over them, and slay them before me. Okay. Now, I think a third reason, and there's a lot of different things you can pull out of this, and I'm not going to be completely exhaustive of that, because parables are meant to be simple, and you don't really want to nitpick every little detail. But it may also be that Jesus is using this incident to remind the people of the dangers of rejecting the duly appointed king, which is Christ Jesus himself. Because later on, when Jesus is appearing before Pilate, they say, we have no king but Caesar. They knew who Jesus was saying he was, but they decided to reject him anyway. So verse 13 and 14, he says, he called 10 of his servants, gave them minas, and he says, put the money to work. That's the NIV version. Mine says, to do business. The King James says, occupy. Basically means, occupy, do trade, do business. Be busy about what the master has given you to do, is what it's saying. And they were not all given 10 minas each. There were 10 servants. Each one was given one mina, an equal share. Now, a mina was worth 100 days' wages for the common laborer in the field. Basically, a 1 day's wage was a drachma. And then 100 days was 100 drachmas was a mina. And 60 minas were equal to one talent. So that's kind of the weights and measures of the day. Now, what does the mina represent in this passage? The mina in a Christian's life is representative of a gift that has been given to them. We're all given different gifts by God. Some are given more than others. But the point of the parable is not the amount of gifts given, but the equal opportunity we all have to use those gifts. He gave his servants equal shares, equal weights of money, to do business. He's given each of us gifts. Every person is called to our particular ministry. Everyone. Every single person has something that they can be doing for God. It doesn't have to be the big, flashy ministry. It can be as simple as having the ministry of prayer. It doesn't have to be something that everybody can see. But as we use those gifts, people's lives are going to be affected. And there's going to be a return. Our business is to use those gifts until he returns. Now, the Bible tells us that these gifts are for the building up of the body. Everyone plays a part. Now, I want to imagine these gifts in action. Now, my kids are very helpful to me. Around the house, they'd be like, you know, Papa, can I help you do the dishes? Can I help you do this? Now, they do that with things they want to do, not necessarily with things they don't want to do. But anyway, they are very helpful. They do like to help. Now, let's imagine I'm teaching up here, which I am. And my daughter, she sees that, Mariah, sees that I need a drink of water. She goes, oh, Papa needs a drink of water. But you know what? I don't want to give him just a plastic cup or a water bottle. I want to give him that mug that I got him for Father's Day. Or was it Father's Day? It was Father's Day. She got me this big Spider-Man mug. It's like this big. And she saw it when she went out shopping with my wife. She said, oh, Papa's got to have that. He's got to have that. So she bought it for me. And so she didn't just want me to use it for tea or hot chocolate. She wanted me to use it for everything. So let's imagine she's bringing that up to me. She's got it on a tray, and she's running down the aisle, and she trips, and it falls to the floor, and it breaks. Now, the person with the gift of helps, they're going to run across the floor, and they're going to start helping her pick everything up. You know, are you okay? They're going to help her pick it up. The person with the gift of mercy is going to say, are you okay, dear? Well, if not, if she's British, if she's in Lakeside, you okay, darling? The person with the gift of teaching is going to say, you know, it'd be so much better if you carried that tray with two hands and you walk slowly down the aisle. Watch where you're putting your feet. The person of prophecy is going to say, I told you that that was going to happen. Now, if you do it again, it's going to happen again. Now, the person with the gift of healing might say, does your leg hurt? Is your knee okay? Do you need me to pray for you? The person with the gift of exhortation might say, get up, get another tray. You can do it. I know you can. Why don't you go get another one? It doesn't have to be the Spider-Man cup. Just get another cup for her. They're going to be encouraging. And someone who loves to pray is just going to sit there and say, Lord, I know they're embarrassed. Please just encourage their heart. You know that, and that's just a little example of what could happen. I mean, there's different things, but there's always going to be something where we can work together. The whole body is meant to work together with our different gifts. No, we're not called to be a pew potato or the frozen chosen where we just sit there on Sunday or Wednesday or whatever day we go to home fellowship. We're called to get up and do something. We have a calling on our life. I mean, it can be as simple as a grandmother ministering to her children. It can be as simple as sitting down with a child every day and reading to them or tutoring, you know, anything. Walking an old lady across the street is all the cliche one everybody always mentions, but there's always something that we can be doing. Jesus said, he who gives a child a cup of cold water in my name will by no means lose his reward. And he's giving something small and significant. Doesn't matter. There's always something. And we're never judged on our degree of ability. We're always judged on our degree of faithfulness. So we just need to be faithful with whatever that gift is. Now, we're also not rewarded according to the scope. You know, how many people does it appear that we've impacted? Like I said, it's always on faithfulness. Now, does everybody know who Johnny Erickson Tata is? She was paralyzed after, I believe it was a diving accident, from her neck down. Now, it appears, if you look on the outside, that she doesn't have anything to offer. She's paralyzed. What could she possibly do? But yet she learns to paint these portraits with her mouth, putting a paintbrush in her mouth and painting these portraits. Now, all of us who are not paralyzed in any way should be able to do something, you know, equally useful for the kingdom. If she's been able to find what her gift is, as limited as she is, all of us with mobility should be able to have something else to do. I mean, there's always something. We just got to find out what that is. So she paints these portraits, and that's her gift. So now the question becomes, what portrait are you going to paint with the gifts that God has given you? And there's a quote I memorized a long time ago, and it's a quote that I always wanted my work ethic to picture. And it's, every job is a self-portrait of those of the one who does it, so autograph your work with excellence. And when I'm at work and I write someone's review or something, a lot of times I'll put that at the end of the review. You know, you need to do more. Set the bar higher for yourself. Autograph your work with excellence. Or I may say something like, we strive for perfection to achieve excellence. All those things are meant to be encouraging to try to drive the employee on. And the same thing, Jesus encourages us to paint a portrait, do something. You know, we're going to stumble, we're going to fall, we're going to trip. But we just get up, we keep moving on. We're faithful in what he's given us to do. We need to paint our portrait with excellence, and we need to be more than warm bodies. Now, while Christ is away, obviously, we need to redeem the time. There are a lot of distractions for us, and we're going to cover those a little bit later. But we need to make sure we're making the most of every opportunity to use the gifts he's given us. Now, verses 15 to 19. He was made a king, however, and returned home. Then he sent for the servants to whom he had given the money in order to find out what they had gained with it. The first one came and said, "Sir, your mina has earned 10 more." "Well done, my good servant," his master replied, "because you have been trustworthy in a very small matter, take charge of 10 cities." The second came and said, "Sir, your mina has earned 5 more." His master answered, "You take charge of 5 cities." Now, he was made king, he returns home. Jesus is going to return. He ascended, he completed his work, and in Revelation 19:16, it says he returns as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Now, it says he went to his servants in order to find out what they had gained with it. Now, it doesn't seem like he's so concerned with the amount. He wants to see what they've gained with it, but he's more concerned with what we've done with it, not how much he's made with it. The first person made 10, the second one made 5. He didn't say, why didn't you do 10? He's looking for the faithfulness. He's looking for the effort that was put forth. He's not looking for, look what Billy Graham did. How come you didn't do that? He's not doing that. He's looking for your effort, our effort. Now, this is also a picture of the Bema Seat of Christ. And it's found in 2 Corinthians 5:10. It's one of the passages. And it's where we receive our reward. We're not receiving salvation there. We're receiving the reward for our faithfulness. And everyone has an equal opportunity, like I said, for these rewards. But I want to think about the system of rewards he set up for us. Now, he saved us. We don't deserve that. We don't deserve to be saved. He makes us his sons and daughters. He adopted us into his kingdom. We don't deserve that. Now, then, by his grace, he gives us gifts. We don't deserve that. All he wants us to do is to be faithful with those gifts. And then, if we're faithful with the gifts that we don't deserve to have in the first place, he gives us rewards for that. Now, he gives us rewards for that, but we never were able to use those gifts by our own strength in the first place. He gave us the grace to use those gifts. So no matter how you look at it, the whole way he set it up, it's a win-win for us as long as we're faithful in that. Now, we're going to get salvation if we believe no matter what. But if we're faithful, we get even more. You only lose if you do nothing. Now, the servant said, "Your mina." He knew who it belonged to. He didn't consider it his. And if you consider the gifts that God's given you, his gifts to use through you, our flesh isn't going to glory in that. "Oh, look what God did through me." Yeah, God did it. You didn't do it. That way you can't say, "Well, look what I've done." It's always what God has done. The Bible says, God grants us repentance. God grants us a measure of faith. God gives us gifts by his grace. It's all God. It's none of us. So we also need to keep in mind that the gifts are for his glory and not for our own self, not for our self-use, not for our glory, not to get something out of it for us. I also want you to notice it doesn't say, "Well done, good and talented servant." Well done, good and gifted servant. It says, "Well done, you have been trustworthy." Emphasizing again, it's the faithfulness that he's looking for. And he says, "You've been trustworthy in a small matter." And it says the reward for faithfulness is actually more responsibility. And this isn't a bad thing. Sometimes it seems that way. But it's not a bad thing. And it's not something that a true servant would consider a burden. It's actually, our faithfulness actually determines our position in the millennial kingdom where we're going to rule and reign with Christ. So we're actually training for that kingdom what our position is going to be. And I'm going to give you an illustration of this. 10 years and 6 months ago, I began working at Costco. And I was a cart puller. I did that for 2 weeks, and then they put me in the food court. I was in the food court for 4 months, rolling hot dogs, making pizza. Actually, I hated that department. But that's where I was. After that, I moved into morning merchandising, which means I was a stocker, and I was a stocker for about 9 months. After that, I got a forklift position. So I drove forklift for 6 months. After that, after applying and applying three or four times, I got a supervisor position in the bakery. I did that for a year and a half. I was faithful in that. But, you know, to move up in Costco and a lot of other places, you need to be versatile. So I was like, I need to go to another department again. Well, I'd been in merchandising as a stocker, as a driver, but you know what? I want to be there as a supervisor. So I transfer there as a supervisor for 2 years. I learn all that, and while I'm there, I get trained to be a forklift trainer. So I keep adding my responsibility, keep extending my resume, things I can do. My responsibility grows. Now, after that, I'm like, you know what? I got all the floor knowledge. I know what I'm supposed to be doing out here, but I haven't had a lot of office time to really learn all the paperwork side of it as much as I want to. So I signed a posting, and after a couple interviews, I got a position in the gas station. Now you're probably thinking, well, all he does is pump gas all day. That's not the case. There's actually a lot of compliance paperwork that has to do with the state and the federal government and all that stuff. So it's actually a whole lot of paperwork responsibility, and you got to make sure you're not fined because you didn't dot the I, or you got to make sure it's legible. There's all sorts of things that go with it. But when I was there, I learned the whole paperwork side, not just at the gas station, but it gave me an opportunity to learn a whole lot more about the company. And while I was there in the gas station, I was thinking, you know, how can I make this more efficient? How can I see if we're saving money? So I would look at our supplies, and I would dig through everything, and I found that there's something called a breakaway. And after we'd change it, we were just tossing it. And that's how they'd been doing it. That's how the person had taught me. And I looked into it, and I was like, well, we can exchange these for money. And so I went through everything that we had been collecting. They hadn't thrown anything away. And I was able to call the company and work out a way where we were able to save $5,000 or $6,000 with these. And so I put that in my review, because I typed my own review. I spent a lot of time on it because I make it look good. And I turned that in, and not the next interview for manager, but the interview after that, I made tire center manager. And so I had another department I was adding to my belt, something else I was learning about the company. I was out there for a year, and now I'm on the front end, which is where all the registers are. And you may see me, and it may seem like I'm standing around, but I am doing more than that. There is a lot more that goes into it. But anyway, I've got this vast knowledge of the company now. But my responsibility in the company, I've been in 7 departments in 10 years. And so my responsibility has increased 7 times, because if there's a question in the gas station, and I actually still oversee the gas station as a manager, I coach that supervisor because they said, you're very familiar with it, you understand it better than anybody else in the warehouse, so you're going to oversee that department. If there's a question in tire center, if the main manager's not there, they call me out there to go look at something because I'm familiar with it. So responsibility increases, and you know, there's rewards for that. Now there's a quote I found, I can't remember where I found it. It said, your responsibility will double every 10 years. And that goes for everybody. And it's not always going to be the same responsibility that doubles. I mean, it may be different for one person than it was for me. I think my responsibility actually, like, see, if it was 7 times the company, and I've got 5 kids now, I think my responsibility has doubled 12 times in 10 years. Something like that. Anyway, you know, when my wife and I first got married, the only thing I had to worry about when I came home was what I wanted to eat. Now when I come home or go to work, depending on the day, it's 5 people, or 6 if it's my wife too, all talking to me at once and me trying to sort it out, going, hold on, hold on, hold on. Okay, you're next. Okay, good. You know, and this is what I feel like I'm doing most of the time, on top of everything else that we're doing. And I'm not complaining. I like my life. But responsibility, it can be stressful. But the joy at the end of it is so much more rewarding, especially the spiritual aspect of it. And this is just the physical aspect that I'm describing. Now, verse 20 and 21. Then another servant came and said, sir, here's your mina. I have kept it, laid it away in a piece of cloth. I was afraid of you, because you are a hard man, You take out what you did not put in and reap what you did not sow. Now, if he really believed that, shouldn't have he been working harder than anyone? If he really feared that his master had that great a power, it should have inspired diligence in him. He should have been willing to go the extra mile in that. No, this is my view when I go to work. I go, you know what? I am replaceable. And we all are in work. And so when I go to work, I go, I need to do that much more to make sure that I am integral to the company. Now, if God calls me somewhere else, the company is obviously going to go on. But we make ourselves indispensable. We make sure, God is obviously not a harsh taskmaster, but he does ask us to do things. And when I tell people at work, I said, look, you make a higher wage than anybody else in retail for the most part. I said, be grateful for your job and get a proper perspective. And we need to look at our master in heaven and be grateful for what he's given us. A lot of us would say, well, I don't have what such and such has, or this person has this. And nothing aggravates me more than a lack of perspective, honestly, especially when people complain about food or something like that. Because when I look at the people in India or the Sudan or the Christians who are being killed by the Muslims thousands a day in certain countries because of genocide or whatever, you know, that Christian population is growing. They're grateful for the food they get each day. And sometimes we're ungrateful because we only get beans and rice or whatever the case may be, whatever food you hate, just think of that. It's all in perspective. Now, we need to have the perspective that Jesus has given us a lot. And he actually says, just be content with food and clothing. And that's, you know, if we don't have cable or dish net or video games, you know what? Bummer. It's not that big of a deal. Life went on without it before. I mean, we only had it for 35 years, video games or whatever it is. You know, God forbid, how did they survive the first 6,000 years? I'm not saying you can't play video games. I've played video games for a long time. But it's the perspective that I'm looking at. So this servant was disobedient. He didn't do business with the money that as he was commanded. Instead, what he did is he came up with excuses as to why he was disobedient. He claimed his master was so powerful, he didn't need him to do business. Well, you're so powerful, I didn't need to do anything. And we've all been asked to do business, but we also all make excuses, including me. But do we make excuses why we shouldn't do ministry? Do we make excuses why we shouldn't give someone the gospel? Do we say, well, God, if they're your elect, you're going to get them saved anyway, so why should I do anything? Or do we say, I don't have time right now? Now, when Pastor Bill asked me, I'd like you to teach on Sunday, the first thing in my mind was, I don't have time. And a lot of you are saying, well, you've got 5 kids and you work 50 hours a week. So no, you don't have time. And the truth is, you make time. There's always something you can do. And I have a goal, and that's to memorize the New Testament. Now, I don't expect to get that goal done until I'm about 80. But I'm slowly making progress, and I try to redeem the time that I have. Now, in my car, it takes me about 10 minutes to get to work. And that's usually the time that I take the time to try to memorize something. Now, I do keep my eyes on the road. Don't worry about that. But every opportunity is an opportunity to do something for the kingdom. I'm not saying you can't rest because we all get exhausted, and I promise you when I go home today, I'm going to sleep on the couch. But we need rest. But there's always opportunity to redeem the time for something. And we need to not make excuses. And again, it's not the degree of ability. Everybody has a different ability. It's the effort. You know, maybe you can't do much. But you can do something. When I went to Calvary Chapel La Mesa, there was a guy there who was teaching for a while. His name was David Corson. I think he was John Corson's brother. And he would always say during the men's Bible study, he said, do what you know, and you'll know what to do. Now that seems simplistic, but we all know something that we can do, like I mentioned before. Maybe there is the old lady crossing the street. Maybe there is someone who you see needs a drink of water. There's always something. If you see a need and you meet that need, maybe that's what you need to do at the moment. That's how you're going to redeem the time. The other truth is sometimes it's purposeful disobedience. God, I don't want to do that. And I've been there too. And other times, we just get distracted. And my kids, I like using my kids as examples because they're the only ones I'm around outside of work. So I'll use work and kids, and those will always be my examples. But I don't think we have the book anymore, but it was a little book about this size, and it was basically about manners or etiquette or health or something like that. I forget what it was. It was just a little block book. But one of the things said, don't watch too much TV. It's bad for you. And then it had a picture of this kid, and he looked like a zombie, and he had drool coming out of his mouth. And when I, that the picture of that book always cracks me up still. But when I think of that book, when I'm talking to my kids, and I'm saying, Christian, go do such and such. You didn't do what you're supposed to do. And he's like this. Okay. As he's walking out of the room, he can't take his eyes off the TV. He's glued to it. But a lot of times, we're all like that. Sometimes when I come home from work, my wife and I, we try to debrief as much as possible. What went on at work? How were the kids today? And a lot of times, I can't focus on what she's saying if the TV is on because I have that same addiction to the TV that my kids do. I'm like, I can't do two things at once. I don't multitask well. But there's distractions that we have in our life. On Wednesday night, we're going through 2 Timothy, and we're in chapter 2 right now, and we just went over the single-minded soldier. Now it says, let me think how it goes. You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one engaged in warfare entangles himself in the affairs of this life that he may please him who enlisted him to be a soldier. Now the word entangled there, it actually means woven into. And it's not talking about a sin that you may get entangled with. It's actually talking about the common daily affairs of life. What common daily affairs of life are we allowing to get in our lives that distract us from our purpose? I used to have a Facebook. I don't have one anymore. Mainly because, and I'm not saying you can't have one. Mainly though, it was very distracting for me. If I do something, I have to do that thing only. I don't split up my time well. So for that reason, I actually have to get rid of a lot of things that from my life that distract me. So I got rid of my Facebook. And one of the reasons was there's these games on there. And there was this game I was playing. It was called Kingdoms of Camelot. And I had no intention of playing this game originally. But my sister said, you don't have to play the game. Just get on there. And if I have a friend join, then I'll get these bonus points. And she says, and just build up your cities a little bit because I'll get points for that too. So I got on there and I was doing this game. And it was, you know, a half hour here, a half hour there. And then pretty soon, and this is a couple of years ago when I was doing this game. Pretty soon it was, oh, well, I want a second city. Oh, well, I want a third city. You know what? Oh, you can get up to 5 cities. I need to get 5 cities. And you know what? I don't just want 5 cities. I want to build up the defenses to the max. And I want to make sure I have all my troops. I want to make sure I do this. And so what I was doing was, and this is when I was doing the home fellowship at the Browns house. I'd be preparing home fellowship, and I'd click over to Facebook. And I'd do march and army attack. They're going to get 30 minutes to get to that place, attack the city, and you'll get whatever you need. Okay, 30 minutes, set my timer. Work on Bible study for 30 minutes. Okay, I got to go back to Facebook. And I was completely distracted. And it went even farther than that. Because it was, with those games, if you pay money, you can get even more. Now, I didn't pay money. I'll tell you what I did do. They have these, if you buy such and such, then we'll give you 30 credits. And with those 30 credits, you can use that to buy this treasure chest of all sorts of things that you can use for your kingdom. And it said, buy Netflix and you'll get this. We actually have Netflix now for that reason. We've never gotten rid of it. But that was actually why we got Netflix. I'm sure I came up with some other reason for my wife as to why we should get it. but that was probably my true underlying heart motive. And there was a bunch of other things that I had done on there. Well, I can justify getting this if I do this. But I was so entranced with this game that it was woven into my life, and it was distracting me from Bible study. It was distracting me from time with my wife, from time with my kids. And I don't multitask well. I can't, if I devote time to something, it has to be to just that. I mean, I would set the timer to where I would get up at 2 a.m. so I could play my next move. That's how distracting it was to me. So I had to get rid of that. And there's going to be things in your life. I mean, I'm not saying you can't have collections of whatever. It's just what dominates your life. Is it distracting you from your purpose that Christ has for you? You know, even with solid goals in mind, we get distracted. You know, I've had the goal to memorize the New Testament for a long time. And I started back when I was 21. That was 16 years ago. And I've definitely made progress, but if I was the single-minded soldier the entire time, I'd be a lot farther than I am now. And, you know, Jesus went away. He's going to come back. He's going to ask us what we've done with our time. Now, when I go to work, I do the same thing with my kids. Again, my kids, they have a chore list. And they're allowed to get, they have points for each one, and they get paid for those points. And then they have to, like, okay, you have to save 70%. You have to give 10%. You can spend 20%. That's how we divvy it. Or, no, you can spend 70, save 20, and give 10. I think that's what it is. I get right now. But they have this list. And if they do it, it gets checked off, signed by me or mom, and then they get money for it. Now, a lot of times I come home, and they've done one thing that they can get money for. And that's usually the thing that they did when I was home, that I encouraged them to do. But when I was away, I was out of sight and out of mind. So they didn't do hardly anything. Now, Mariah is actually the best one to get things done. She's actually very self-motivated for the most part. So she will actually, at the end of the week, when we call it payday, it's usually on Sunday. At the end of the week, she usually gets more than everybody else because she was more diligent. Everybody else is a little bit more distracted. It's not always the case, but for the most part. But Jesus is gone. He's in heaven. Now, he lives in our hearts, but he's out of sight, out of mind. So it makes it that much more important for us to be diligent for his return. That's why it says to keep in mind, you know, he could come at any day. Are we being faithful to what he's given us? Are we waiting for that return truly? Verse 22 and 23. His master replied, I will judge you by your own words, you wicked servant. You knew that I am a hard man, taking out what I did not put in and reaping what I did not sow. Why then didn't you put my money on deposit so that when I came back I could have collected it with interest? You know, the servant didn't even do the basic, which is put the money in the bank. I mean, if you look at the interest you get on money in the bank, it's not really a whole lot if it's a checking account or whatever the case may be. But it's something that you're getting back. And it's not that he even cared how much he got back on the return, like we already mentioned. He's trying to develop character in us. That means we're going to go through hardships with the gifts that we use. Now, remember I told you before, I was thinking, well, I can't do the sermon. I don't have time. This last 3 days at work, it was hell, literally. Thursday was the first day of our coupon book. And normally, and I'm not going to describe our productivity necessarily, but we like to hover around a certain number, and that number is 1,300. That way we can offer a certain amount of service to the members. We can make sure we keep the floor clean. Thursday, we peaked at a 1,700. That is incredibly high. It's incredibly stressful. And I was planning to work on the study through all my lunches. That's usually when I do it. But I ended up having to work through my lunches just to make sure we got everything done. Friday was also super high, not as high. It was like 1528, and yesterday it was almost 1500. So it was very busy days. Now, the company will be happy because, you know, we're making payroll. But it was very difficult, and I came home last night, and I was just like, you know what? I really don't want to finish this. I don't want to organize it. I don't want to look at it. And it took me, I got home at 8:15. It took me about an hour and 45 minutes. I started about 10 o'clock before I finally got upstairs and went, okay, I got to focus. I got to do this. And once I started, and you know, I know those things were trials to set me back. But I know that those trials are developing character, hopefully. But it was hard. But the Bible says to persevere, so I persevered. And hopefully you're getting something out of it. Now, it is true that Jesus doesn't need us to get people into the kingdom. But he does want to use us to develop us. He wants us to grow closer to him. And we do that through those trials, through that perseverance. And it also grows our faith in him, and it develops us into the godly people that he wants us to be. And every Christian should really feel the need to serve Christ because of who he is and what he's done. Who he is should be the reason we want to work. It also says in 2 Timothy, remember Jesus of the seed of David. I'm paraphrasing now because I completely blank on how it goes. But remember Jesus Christ, the seed of David, who was resurrected the third day. And when you hear someone say, remember, a lot of times it's a motivation. When the Alamo was overrun by Santa Ana's armies, Sam Houston and his little ragtag band of army had to go and attack Santa Ana's army. And their call for victory was, remember the Alamo. And they went after that, and they won the battle. They killed 650 of the army, and they captured 750 or something, somewhere around there. They had about a third of the troops that the Mexican army had. They lost 9 Texans out of all that. That's what the battle cry does. That's what happens when we remember our focus, when we keep our eyes on the prize, so to speak. Verse 24 and 26. Then he said to those standing by, take his mina from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas. Sir, they said, he already has 10. He replied, I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given. But as for the one who has nothing, even what they have will be taken away. Now, he gave it to someone who he knew would get good use out of it. You've got to remember the phrase, use it or lose it. You have a gift. You need to use it. When you don't use something, it's like when someone's leg is cast up, that muscle atrophies. It becomes shriveled because they haven't used it. Same thing happens with our gifts. You're not going to get more refined at it. You're not going to be able to use it better. You're not going to be able to develop it if you're not trying to do something with it. If you choose not to use what Christ has for you to do, he's going to let someone else have the blessing. And you know what? I would much prefer to have the blessing. I would much prefer to have gone through that 3 days of hell at work, to have been able to teach you, hopefully bless you with something, than to not have it. And I tell you, I debated for a couple days, and I don't regret the decision. Verse 24 to 26. Oh, wait, I already read that. Hold on. Okay. So the third servant, you know, it looks like, and some will say, did he lose his salvation? And if he didn't lose his salvation, what did he lose? Remember, there's three classes of people in this parable. There was the master, the servant, and the citizens. They're all servants, so they're all Christians. So it begs the question, what did he lose? Well, if you look at 1 Corinthians 3, verses 12 to 15, or verses 11 to 15, it says, For no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. If anyone builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, their work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each person's work. If what has been built survives, the builder will receive a reward. If it is burned up, the builder will suffer loss, but yet will be saved, even though only as one escaping through the flames. So the third servant had everything taken from him. He did remain in his master's house. He still went to heaven, but he was saved by the skin of his teeth. He had nothing to show for his life on earth. He was simply there. Now, we can say, well, at least he was there. Yeah, at least he was there. But Christ offers us so much more than that if we're faithful. If we're unfaithful with the gifts he's given with us and do nothing, we're not going to have anything to show for our life in heaven. Verse 27. But those enemies of mine who did not want me to be king over them, bring them here and kill them in front of me. And this seems harsh. But in the end, if you choose Christ, you choose life. If you don't choose him, you choose death. That's really how it is. And we really need to have a heart for the lost. When I see people at work or other places, and I know they're not Christians, and I see them grasping for things that they think are going to try to fill their lives, I feel very sorry for them. And it makes me have that much more of a heart to hope that they get saved. But we all need to be looking, you know, with that radar, you know, who's lost? Or maybe there's a Christian that needs encouraging to grow in their gifts and their faith, that we can do that too. But apart from Christ, there is nothing. And you know what? If you don't bow to him on earth, you're going to bow to him in heaven. It's so much better to do it here than there. I mean, we're going to do it there too, but we're going to do it in a good way. They're not. So, the application. He's going to come back. I don't know when that day is. No one can ever say when that day is. But are we using the gift? Are we doing business until he comes? Do we want Jesus to reign over us? He's going to, one way or another. And like I said, if you're already his servant, are you doing the business he told you to do? Let's close in prayer. Lord, I do thank you for the life that you have given us, for the sacrifice that you made. But Lord, you want so much more from us. You want to use us. You want to develop us. You have such great plans laid out for us. Lord, I pray that we would take the opportunity to use those gifts, to paint a portrait with those gifts that's on par with the finest work of art that we have in this world, that's even better. Help us to be faithful. Help us to focus on that goal. We love you and praise you. In Jesus' name, amen.